Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I believe that Gabriel Krauss has joined us. Gabriel, a very, very good morning, and thank you for joining us. I was actually asking listeners what they think he should do, the president, and removing the fact that whether you like the bloke or not, because that is our challenge, isn't it? We tend to give people we like a little bit more of a pass. What do you think? Should he, do you believe that Ramaphosa should have resigned?
Good morning, Hart. Yeah, it's a tough question. I think that the answer depends on the extent of his misconduct. So, on his version, he didn't ever really know about the money being there. He wasn't in charge. He's got a, you know, long arm relationship with his properties because of, ever since he was the deputy president, there needed to be blind trusts established for his estate's assets to be managed. Mm-hmm. And so the violation in play is a technical violation with no real culpability of a serious kind. It's like a traffic fine or something similarly negligible. That's not to say he shouldn't maybe pay a fine, but it is to say that it's not the kind of conduct that you would want the whole political system to be upended to address. Mm, mm. So if his version is true, if that is really all it amounts to, then I think he should be fighting this out. And there clearly are, you know, a whole bunch of agendas in play here on the MKA and ATM side, EFF side. You know, there are not necessarily good faith actors going after him. They're people who very clearly have committed mass corruption, stealing large quantities of money from the public purse, from private VBS, from, you know, grannies' bank accounts. Okay, but on the other hand, if we look at one of the most famous near impeachments, which led to a resignation of Richard Nixon, there the issue wasn't really the original crime at Watergate. Mm-hmm. Really, the issue was the cover-up. And I think the more serious concerns about Ramaphosa's conduct are what he did after it came to light that the theft had occurred from his couch. The Wally Rood aspect, the use of, I guess, you know, what are essentially presidential bodyguards as police investigators, crossing borders, going in Namibia. I think to terminate then public prosecutor Siwe Mkhwebane's reign as public prosecutor, she had been unconstitutional. I mean, there had been grounds to remove her 3 months after her appointment, which was, you know, back in 2017 or thereabouts. There had been court cases going on and on and on about trying to get rid of her. And the one obstacle was Ramaphosa. Once he became president, he's like, no, I'm keeping her. And he actually said to court, it would be a clear evidence of misconduct if I removed her before the court has given its judgment about her conduct. So he set his own rule, like, I can't get rid of her until the court says it's okay. Then she asks him questions about Palapala. That afternoon he gets rid of her. And most bizarrely, there was a court judgment coming out. It came out 2 days later. So there's something extremely fishy about that behavior. He could have just waited 2 days if he wanted to stick to his own rule that he'd established for years. But instead, he pulled the trigger suddenly, immediately after she began a probe into Palapala. And that was the first moment where genuinely independent investigator was coming into play. Until then, it was really just his own bodyguards. That makes me think maybe there is more to it. And I think part of what the panel found is that, you know, there's enough smoke here that there really should be a proper investigation as to whether there's fire.
Does it make a difference? Is it relevant that he built his campaign and reputation off a non-zero tolerance for corruption platform?
Yeah, I think it does make a difference politically. I mean, look at the DA. John Steenhuisen had a bit of a question mark raised around his use of the, you know, company credit card, so to speak. Mm. And again, it wasn't like this is criminal misconduct. There was no allegation that this is like major VBS level fraud, but there was some concerns around it. And the party has, that party has the depth to, you know, for the leader to step down and for someone equally, if not more credible, to take his role. I think part of Ramaphosa's problem is, like, if he does try and do the brave thing and say, look, I ran on a no corruption platform, I was trying to clean house after Zuma, I really don't think that this is anything serious, but even the appearance of it being something is undermining the message we're trying to send out, the Tumamina message of let's all be goody two shoes and get it all exactly right. So I'm going to step down and someone more capable or equally capable and credible is going to take my spot. Well, is that going to happen if he steps down? Is someone more clean or
well, that
credible
was, that,
going to?
That was my problem yesterday. I kept thinking, you know, is he going to announce his resignation? And I thought my conclusion was I actually don't care because it's kind of irrelevant. I might think he's corrupt and incompetent and lost his moral compass, but the reality is, who's going to replace him at the ANC? Will it make any difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would make a difference. One of the things that is important to distinguish is a politician or a political role player's personal corruption and their, you know, what they do officially in their role. And so, like, Pravin Gordhan was always a good example for me. He was clearly not personally corrupt. He was brought in after the Des Van Rooyen affair precisely to have, you know, some kind of credibility in Treasury. On the other hand, he presided over a doubling of the national debt in a fairly short amount of time, because every time the unions wanted a raise, he said yes. So, you know, if you compare him to Enoch Godongwana, Godongwana has, and Tito Mboweni, both of them actually stared down the unions and you know, gave them serious opposition. And we've just seen the latest version of that with Joburg and the Godongwana letter to Dada Morero. So, you know, it's not good enough to not be corrupt. If you're like a very honest communist, you can still ruin a country. Or if you're a very like honest ideological terrorist or something. So I think the worry for me is, like, you know, Ramaphosa, who would replace him? If it is someone like Panyaza Lesufi, let's say Panyaza Lesufi is squeaky clean on his own personal balance sheet. What he's done in Gauteng is allocate an EFF minister to the role of basically, you know, their finance minister. Do you want Julius Malema to be the minister of finance at national level? I mean, do you think you can afford that? I don't think anyone can afford that. That is that's a price to pay that goes well beyond cash in a couch.
Right. Let's just focus for a moment on the DA. You mentioned them earlier, but in different contexts, they are part of the Government of National Unity. So what does this mean? I mean, they obviously are very big on accountability, but also see a different picture here politically. How should they be? What are they likely to do, and what should they be doing?
I mean, I think that they are in a tremendously sticky spot. In a way, the earlier Concord judgment and the vote had come, well, let's say the votes had come at a good time for them because they could pivot from criticizing Ramaphosa to being eager to work with him in the last bit of the build-up to the election and then especially coming out of that. What do they do here? What should they do here? I think what they're going to do is they're going to try and walk this line of saying, you know, we're kind of with you, we're kind of against you. And so their early messaging has been, you know, the president has said basically he's going to do a judicial review application on this panel report because he thinks it's fundamentally flawed. And the DA was like, okay, that's your right, but don't slow down the process. In other words, don't ask for an interdict to stop the parliamentary investigation from going ahead. And that's a good issue to fight him on because you can sort of say, I don't like this little thing that you're doing where you're trying to halt the process. As long as you keep it procedural, you don't really get to the substance of the matter. You can kind of maintain a working relationship. And I think that, you know, if you've ever seen a genuine breakdown in a working relationship, like where people start taking each other to the CCMA and suing each other, but they still have to come into the same office, they're still drawing their salaries and they're still nominally like I'm the CEO, you're the CFO, or vice versa, or whatever. I think that is what this is going to be. It's like when the customer's around, to some extent, you try and show a united front and say, oh, look, we're all working together. But on the other end, you're trying to sort of distance yourself from the person and trying to kind of shank them in a way. I think that the DA is going to do both those things. I think that some, you know, the DA, the IFP, all of these parties are obviously going to try and avoid a motion of no confidence vote because that would also remove them. The no confidence vote thing collapses the whole cabinet.
Oh, I didn't realize that. GNU. Okay, I didn't realize that. I thought that it just removes the president.
No, that's the Section 89 removal vote.
Right.
The Constitution doesn't use the word impeachment, but it is an impeachment vote. Yes. So the impeachment vote keeps the cabinet together and just removes him, whereas the no confidence vote, they remove themselves. So that's why the IFP has already come out and said, no, we're never going to do that. The DA is going to never do that. But the, you know, the outside parties, the EFF, MK, Mashaba's party, they're all like, no, do the no confidence vote, collapse the GNU, and then let's see how the cookie crumbles.
Got it. That makes sense. So how is this playing out in your view?
In my view.
How's this going to be playing out?
Where does it end? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Ramaphosa is going to fight this in court and in parliament. I think that he will prevail in parliament. I doubt that he'll prevail in court. I think that they'll do the whole investigation. There'll be some political theater. There'll be some good TV to watch, I guess, at some point, but there'll be a lot of boring stuff. You know, I think you can have weeks and weeks. We've seen so many commissions of inquiry. It's going to be like another one of those where you get endless experts to testify about tiny little details that kind of just drown the public in oversaturation of minutiae. And I think eventually we're going to see the battle really play out next year at the ANC's elective conference. And until now, it looked like Ramaphosa might have been the first guy to get a third term as ANC leader. You know, Mbeki tried, Zuma would have tried. But I don't think he's going to do that because of this cloud.
Yeah.
And what this does is it weakens his ability to designate an heir, but it perhaps accelerates the ANC's awareness that, like, they need to get someone credible after Ramaphosa to boost their image and actually attract votes. And so, you know, maybe they'll look to some of the insider outsiders. Obviously, Patrice Motsepe is used as an example of that.
Yeah.
I think there are others. But, you know, I think that really the biggest impact of this is going to be how it affects that elective conference next year. And I think Ramaphosa is not even going to run as a result. And that opens the field for maybe something better.
And that's where we leave it, Gabriel Krauss. Thank you as always.